Have you ever ridden like a bird scooter or any of those?
I have not. I have not scootered.
The last minute, I saw that I was about to hit probably a foot in diameter pothole, and I just dumped the scooter and jumped off because I would have just gone flying. Welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour on a Friday. It is especially ha ha and fun time on Fridays, especially when we have Matt Miller, culture editor from On Milwaukee, as we do once a month to give us an update on what's going on in pop culture and entertainment. And we're so happy whenever you are here, sir.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So I saw you tweet about, well, I think you were retweeting someone's thoughts about this, but apparently there's no kids movies in the theaters right now.
It's wild. So kids movies, kind of a foundational block of the box office industry, of the movie industry. Guess what the last kids movie, animated movie, guess when the last one came out?
Christmas?
Yeah, before Christmas. Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, was the 3 months ago at this point, by the way. That was the last children's movie put into theaters on a wide scale. And as a result, that movie's made a ton of money. Like, that movie has, like, made five times its opening weekend, mainly just because there are no other movies to take kids to in theaters. I mean, sure, you could risk it with Shazam 2, which has got some scary stuff in it. And sure, you could try to convince yourself Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, is a kids movie. But the next kids movie coming out is Super Mario Brothers. And that's part of the reason why everyone right now is very bullish on that movie just making a ton of money when it comes out, is in part because it's the first kids movie to come out in months. And it is weird that Hollywood has kind of neglected this kids movie genre because A, it was wildly profitable before the pandemic, and B, it is a genre that basically requires two tickets because it is a movie that is a parent buying a ticket for a child in most cases. There's not a lot of kids seeing movies alone. So it's just very strange that we are in this desert of children's entertainment.
Has there been any theories as to why that is?
Part of it you could blame on Disney. During the pandemic, Disney obviously pushed, as many studios did, pushed a lot of their stuff to the streaming service. But Disney kept going with it. Disney has kind of conditioned audiences to assume animated movies are Disney Plus movies now, as opposed to movies they should take the time and see in theaters. I mean, look what happened with Encanto, where they kind of barely did any marketing for that movie. It did okay at the box office, but then they put it on Disney Plus, and it made it. That's when We Don't Talk About Bruno became a hit, much to many parents' dismay.
I actually heard the opposite. Every parent I know who was like, finally, like, I would listen to the Encanto soundtrack 10 times out of 10 rather than Baby Shark one more time.
I mean, I think when it first started, I mean, after the first 1,000 times you hear that song, you're like, this is great. And then after that, you're like, this is haunting my nightmares. This is the soundtrack to my personal hell. But it's just kind of strange. And there's more coming. There are more coming out in theaters. But it is just strange that they've treated the last 3 months as this dead zone for children's entertainment when, again, it's crummy outside. It's February. It's 30 degrees and slushy outside. You're not going to play out in the park. Now's a perfect time to release some kids' movies.
That's really true. And I didn't really, because I don't have kids, and so I wasn't even thinking about it, especially just an opportunity to get your kids out of the house instead of once again throwing a movie on in the house.
And I mean, if you look at Netflix's top tens, it's a lot of like family stuff that does well on there. Sing and these retreads that they've brought up and these older animated movies. And I think that's a lot because, well, I can't take them to the theaters. I'm not going to take them to see John Wick Chapter 4, not unless I want my children taken away from me.
Speaking of which, are you excited for that movie?
Oh, I saw it.
Oh, you already saw it.
I set aside 5 hours of my life to go see John Wick.
Wait, is it that long?
It is a 3-hour long movie.
It's just like a 3-hour like blood ballet of like choreography.
Blood ballet is an excellent way to describe it because that's really what it is. It is a 3-hour blood ballet. It is gorgeous and violent, and it is so excessive. Every action scene has like 15 extra beats to it. It's the hardest working action series in Hollywood right now, which is saying a lot because Tom Cruise has got Mission Impossible going. But there's a whole fight scene at the end of that movie that is just a hoot to watch because it's clearly just stuntmen showing off. It is like 30 minutes of stuntmen being like, we're just going to keep tossing ourselves down this long stairway and there's nothing you can do to stop us. This is the most fun we're ever going to have.
Well, and that's what we're talking to Matt Miller, who is the culture editor at On Milwaukee for our monthly pop culture update. And, you know, when I first saw John Wick was not on my radar at all as a movie that I would like. And then randomly ended up watching all three in like one sitting. And I think it was described to me, and it made sense of what's so incredible about those movies, is that so many movies, the action sequence and the fight sequences are quick cuts instead of these wide angle, long shots that is really, like you just said, being able to show stuntmen and what they do and what Keanu Reeves does and the choreography that goes into these fight scenes. And granted, there's a lot of guns in them and everything, but like it is such a... If you can appreciate it for what it is of the skill and the talent that's going into what it, and that's why I say ballet, because it is heavily choreographed.
Yeah, action is dance. And it's funny because, you know, we're really bad at filming dance sequences now, and we're really bad at filming action sequences in a lot of cases. It's a lot of quick cuts and a lot of trying to, you know, cover up, you know, mistakes and trying to not wanting to spend the money on good choreography and things of that nature, and really thinking out where we need to put the camera and how we need to make this look as good as possible. It's a lot easier to hack apart an action scene in the editing room and make it look good. Liam Neeson has made a past 15 years of his career off of Hollywood being able to hack apart crummy choreography and crummy action scenes into something that seems intense and seems exciting. So I think that's part of the reason why there's so much love for the John Wick movies, is that you can tell the guys who made these movies are former stuntmen. Yeah. They care about the process. They care about the art of a great action scene. And it pays off. Is John Wick Chapter 4 too long? Yeah, it's 3 hours long. That's probably too long. But when it rules, it really rules. You feel like you are 100% getting your money's worth.
All right. So recommend. If I liked the first three, will I like this one?
You will. I think for me, the peak of the series is 2, okay, which is for me the best action while also the most grounded. 3 gets lost in a lot of like lore side tangents where it's like he has to go to the Monsignor to get the chalice, to get the marker. And I mean, it's awesome because along the way, he and, you know, dogs just ruin a bunch of henchmen's lives. But it is a lot of meandering. And this new one, it's just wild. It's just the amount of action in it. It contains more action than just about any other action movie you will see.
All right. Well, that is good to know. So when I want to talk about this topic first, and then when we come back, I want to get to the WGA and ChatGPT. But
too many acronyms.
I know. So many letters. But speaking of movies going to theaters, Apple is investing, like, because everything for Apple so far has been movies that play on Apple TV. Apple TV Plus? Yeah.
Yes, that's their streaming service.
Apple TV Plus, not to be confused with the hardware of Apple TV.
Can't imagine why people get confused about streaming.
But so now they are planning to spend, is that $1 billion per year to produce movies that will be produced in the theaters. And I have to say, I haven't seen everything that has come out on Apple. I'm a big Ted Lasso fan. I liked the first season of Morning Show. But I feel like so far, the quality of the stuff that they've been putting out is pretty good. So do you have high expectations for what they will do as a actual studio for movies that could go to theater?
Yeah, they've been releasing stuff. I mean, they won Best Picture a year ago with Coda. People forget that.
Oh, I forgot that was Apple.
Will Smith's slap truly erased everyone's memories.
Seriously.
Like, truly, no one remembers that Oscars other than the slap.
Other than if you watch the Oscars and then the guy who had won for Best Supporting Actor was there signing this year. And that was like the last. That was the. Since they won, the next time I thought about Coda was seeing him at the Oscars, if I'm being totally honest.
Yeah, that's part of the problem with Coda. They also did Tragedy of Macbeth. They've done a lot of really interesting stuff. I think they're trying to take over the kind of HBO mantle from HBO ever since it got bought by the people who own Discovery Channel and that whole conglomerate. But this is also coming off the heels of Amazon making a pledge that they're going to dedicate $1 billion or so dollars into making movies for theaters. And that's because, as we're finding out, streaming services don't make money. Streaming services are not profitable businesses. It is very hard to spend billions of dollars on content and try to make your money back on $10, $15 monthly subscriptions. It's just not a good business model. And people are learning that theatrical is a great way to make money back. And it's a great way to get bonus promotion for these movies. The movies that do well on these streaming services are ones that people have heard about in theaters, because those movies get proper advertising. People see them in theaters and they talk about them. They treat them like real movies. Mm-hmm. Whereas when something just gets dumped onto a streaming service, people don't care. People don't talk about it. There's a new movie next week coming out on Apple TV Plus called Tetris. Have you heard of that movie until this exact moment?
No.
That's because streaming is a black hole void. Putting stuff in theaters gets people's attention and gets it treated like an actual movie, and then more people watch. And who knew that this theatrical model that we've had for over a century works?
People stick around. Because I feel like every 10 years there's something that it's like, well, this is going to kill movie theaters, and yet they survive.
I mean, when the TV was invented, they said theaters were going to die. When World War II broke out, they said theaters were going to die. You know, it is unkillable. At the end of us, there will be cockroaches in movie theaters. And unless they come up with a way to make money off of streaming, and the only way to do that is to make crummy, bad content. And, well, that doesn't seem like a good model there. So, yeah, viva la theaters.
All right. Well, when we come back, I would love to get your input on what's happening with the WGA and why they're not threatened by AI technology. Our guest is Matt Miller, who is the culture editor at On Milwaukee. We'll be right back.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Show business like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything that traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people.
Welcome back to like As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madner. Is that your favorite song, Jane?
Oh, no.
No.
There are so many.
So many.
So many. But I do love that song.
I do love that song, too. And our guest this half hour, as he's here once a month, every month, Matt Miller from On Milwaukee, where he is the culture editor, here to give us his hot takes on everything that's happening in entertainment and pop culture. And I want to end because the Summerfest lineup did drop, but we will start with, in the both excitement and worry over all of these AI technologies that are coming out, ChatGPT. I've played some with ChatGPT in trying to figure out ways to make my life easier with all the different stuff that I'm doing. I don't know if you've played around with it as a writer. I don't know if you feel threatened by it as a writer. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like for people whose jobs it is to write or to do stuff that takes brain power, there's this fear that is this going to disrupt jobs? And so I was a little surprised when I saw that the Writers Guild of America proposes that AI can help write TV and film scripts. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, so I'll start with one thing right off the bat. AI art and writing sucks.
It does.
Straight up.
It does. I've asked it to write some jokes. Not very funny.
It is the creation of people who can't create. It is people who are upset they can't be artists and can't write, having a computer plagiarized for them. Because this is a key point, is that AI is not creating anything. It is plagiarizing. It is regurgitating from other sources. And that is one of the points the WGA, the Writers Guild of America, made recently. Now, this headline you're talking about, where Variety, the big trade in Hollywood, said that, you know, the WGA would be open to AI being used in the writer's space, is a half-truth in its way. And it's very important right now to take a lot of these headlines about the Writers Guild with a grain of salt, because right now the Writers Guild is in the middle of a union kind of strike. They are trying to negotiate with the overall industry. And as a result, the industry is in the Variety's ear and is publishing headlines that weaken the union and get people concerned about, oh, does the union have our best interests in hand? So a headline that says the WGA is interested in AI art being acceptable might make some writers upset, almost as upset as my dogs are running around. The WGA clarified its stance on this, which is, we don't want AI getting anywhere near anyone's revenue or anyone's credits or anything like that. We want, if ChatGPT is going to be used, it is a tool. It is not a creator. It is a tool in the same way Final Cut Pro should be used as a tool. It is not a creative tool. It is not a creator.
Yeah.
It should get credit for nothing. And if studios think that they can just, you know, put their ideas into ChatGPT and get scripts, that's not going to work with us, you know? So it's a little bit more complex than this, that they want it to be able to be used for certain aspects of things, but they don't want it to be able for studios to push writers out of the way and be like, ChatGPT's got this. That's okay, Aaron Sorkin. You can go.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would actually. Have you played with it at all?
I have a little bit, and it's nothing. It is a device that can only make mealy mouth. It can't have any opinions because it doesn't have a brain.
Yeah.
Because it is just able to take other people's thoughts and other people's words and other people's concepts into consideration. So unsurprisingly, the writer hates the AI writer.
Totally. And I can see, and I'm trying to figure out what it can be used for as a tool instead of like something that is going to replace actual brain power.
I just don't think it's a tool we need.
Yeah.
It's like the AI art stuff. It's just like, why are we working? There are so many problems in this world. Why are we trying to fix one of the most human things we have, which is creativity?
Yeah.
Why are we trying to monetize? Because that's what at the end of the day is here. They're trying to, you know, make art as, you know, commodifiable as possible. And if everyone can make art, and if everyone can write an article, and if everyone can do these things, well, then it loses its value and it becomes, you know, McDonald's.
Well, I'm glad to hear your opinion on that. All right. Well, let's close on your opinion, because I haven't really gotten to comb through it yet. But first takes on the Summerfest lineup for 2023.
It's interesting. When I first saw the lineup, I was a little like, oh, okay, it's fine. A lot of familiar faces, a lot of familiar names, whatever. And then I started going through it, like really kind of diving more into it and setting up the weekends and like looking at what I wanted to cover. And it was like, oh, I'm going to be there every day.
Like, oh, wow. Okay.
There's something every day that is interesting, that is exciting, that is an act that I want to see or I'm interested in seeing. I listened to a bunch of Japanese Breakfast last night and was like, yeah, I'd see this live.
Okay.
I'm very excited for this. So I don't think it's high every year we expect like a Lollapalooza level lineup or like a Coachella level lineup where it's going to be these massive names and the hippest, coolest stuff right off of Pitchfork's top 10 of the year. And that's not what Summerfest does. Summerfest is a festival not for music nerds and hipsters. It is a festival for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think this lineup does a really good job of hitting on everyone.
Who are some of the, because I haven't actually gone through it. Who are some of the, like the big amphitheater acts that are coming?
They've got Imagine Dragons and AJR coming on the final night. Okay. That's going to do really well. Imagine Dragons famously broke Summerfest about a decade ago. Important to note, Smash Mouth is going to be there.
Yes!
Not on the main stage. Surprisingly, Smash Mouth will not be at the amp. But one I'm really interested in is Odessa, which is going to be taking the amp on June 30th. It's an EDM show, really popular. Apparently, it's just like super, an incredible live show, an incredible light sound live show. It's not the kind of thing that usually happens at the amp. So I'm kind of interested to see how that kind of show translates in the middle of the chaos that is the big gig.
All right. Well, Matt Miller, thank you as always for spending time with us. We'll see you next time. On with the show. Well, it started. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And a reminder that we still have one pair of tickets left to give away for Charlie Barron's on Monday night. It is an event sponsored by Civic Media, but he is going to do a live recording of his Cripes cast with Mike Wagner, who is a professor of communications and I think it's political communications at, he's been on the show and now I'm forgetting exactly what he teaches, but I know that he is wonderful.
Yes, he is.
And so they are going to be talking about the election and I'm sure Wisconsin in general and journalism. But that is happening at Comedy on State at 7:30 on Monday.
In Madison.
And we still have a pair of tickets to give away, VIP tickets.
First three rows, baby.
Yeah. And so we already gave one set away. We're asking questions about what the state symbols are. So now, I mean, if you call in and you're the, let's say the third caller this time, not right now, I'll tell you when, but there's limited time left in the show, so you know it's going to be soon. You don't have to get the questions right, but
we just want to test your general Wisconsin knowledge.
Yeah, and so that is still coming up. But you sent me this, and so flight attendants, so right now, as it is, when you fly in a plane and you have a child who's two or younger, you don't have to buy them a ticket.
They can sit on your lap.
And now flight attendants want to ban lap babies on planes. And most experts agree that flying with a baby in your lap is a safety risk, but regulators still allow it. And so how do you feel about lap babies? Is this something that we should regulate? And you have to, in the same way we regulate seatbelts and car seats, that if you're going to fly with your young children, they have to have their own seat. Or is this something that should be left up to the discretion of parents? How do you feel about this? 844-967-2789. And as two people who don't have children, do you have a strong feeling about this?
Well, I can certainly, I mean, don't we require kids to ride in car seats until they're like 12 years old?
I don't know if it's 12. I think it's once they hit a certain
weight.
Yeah.
But I can see where we've had some pretty wicked instances with turbulence just on flights around the country. And your munchkin can go flying, seriously.
Yeah.
Or hit the divider in front of them. You know, that would not be good. And I can see a lot of pushback about this because who wants to have to pay full price for a third of a human? I mean, really, though, and you and I, when we were talking about this off the air, because I said, well, why are they going to, you know, offer a reduced price?
And I would say absolutely not.
Right.
There's no way they're giving up because, like, the cost of the seat is the cost of the seat.
Right.
Right. And it's just because it's not like, you know, like to a certain extent, the museum, like if you think about where do kids get in? I guess you could argue, as we were just talking about movie theaters, a cost of a seat is a cost of a seat. And there is a reduced price for tickets to a show. But I feel like when you think about the ways that the airlines nickel and dime you on everything, on upgrade for more legroom, upgrade to be able to check an extra bag, have more cargo space, have a different meal. Like everything is more money. And one, if you are forcing people to, I think the economics of this is puts the onus on families who are traveling, especially if you have lots of kids, that all of a sudden it might become too expensive to fly. And in reality, driving long distances like that is less safe than flying. There is way more car accidents than there is turbulence on planes.
That's true.
And so you're putting families who cannot maybe afford to buy that like full price tickets for everyone that they're flying with. But then also, is that not creating more demand for all of us if some seats are constantly be taken up by a child? And so how many more children would have to get seats for them to add another flight? But instead, the flights get booked up faster with kids. And so, like, I think it'd be interesting to see. I mean, if anything, you'd think that because airlines are profit-seeking entities, I'm surprised they don't require this.
I know, already, right?
Like, someone's done the math on this, and they've figured this out, because I would imagine that if that's truly I would think that it'd be more profitable and they'd sell more seats if you forced kids to sit in a seat. And it also sounds like it's safer. So I don't really understand who's continuing to say, nah.
Let's just let it go the way it's always been.
But if you have strong feelings about this, give us a call, 844-967-2789. Or if you have any stories about flying with your kids and whether it's easier or harder having them on your lap, or if you wish that you would have just gotten them a seat and put a car seat in there, because I know less about what it's like to travel with children.
Yeah. And I have so much admiration for parents, because my husband and I have done some long overseas trips, and I always feel terribly for the parents who have the one screamer, because we've had flights like that where they scream for 6.5 hours.
Oh my God.
And I feel really bad for those parents. At the same time, I have so much admiration for parents whose kids are perfect.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, how did you do that? Did you drug them? Can you give some to me?
And so I actually had a friend recently. I think they took their like 4-month. I forgot how old Charlie was, but my friend is Australian, and they had their kid in June of 2022, and around the holidays, so he must have been around 6 months, and they finally, for the first time in years because of the pandemic, finally made it over to Australia.
Oh.
And I asked, I was like, how did it go? And I think, if I remember correctly, she said, because that is a long flight.
Yes, it is. I've done that flight.
California, anywhere in California to Australia is a long flight,
it's
a much longer flight with an infant. And so, I'll ask her. Maybe she did drug him.
Do you think she would tell you that?
Yeah, she probably would.
She probably would. We have John from Stevens Point checking in on lap babies. John, thanks for joining us. What do you want to say?
Well, you know, I'm just interested in that conversation because I think, you know, I don't fly a lot, but how long has flight been around? You know, over 100 years, but passenger flights, you know, lap babies have been a thing for a long time. I didn't think it was a major issue to have a baby on the lap. When I think about it, I can understand the safety features, the safety issues and such. Is it, you know, a ploy to sell more tickets? I gotta wonder about that.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it should be just left up to the parents, if they feel comfortable with the baby on the lap. And in some cases, you know, babies can't take a long trip in a car seat. So they've got to be, you know, on the option. Lap. It's an interesting issue.
John, I'm just shocked that you would be implying that the airlines might once again be trying to nickel and dime us into exorbitant extra fees that we really shouldn't have to be paying. I don't know.
Hence my reason for not flying a lot.
What's the closest, in Stephen's point, because my parents are in Wisconsin Rapids, what's the closest airport for you to fly in and out of when you do fly?
Up in Mosinee.
Mosinee, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, just out of Wausau. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, so you're pro keeping it as it is of like leave it up to the parents who right now they can buy an extra seat if they want, but not forcing them to do it.
Right. I think so. I think that's the way to go. I think a lot of parents would agree with me. You know, I've got grown kids. I've got grandkids that have flown and, you know, the grandkids are older, so they've purchased, you know, seats. But I think it's, you know, I just leave it the way it is and leave it up to the parents, I think. I think a bigger question, though, is when is the government going to mandate helmets for people driving in cars?
Oh.
Like NASCAR.
Is that a proposal right now?
I don't think so, but I've often wondered when that's going to happen.
On top of your seatbelt, you have to wear a helmet in the car. People would hate that.
I know. Can you imagine the fervor over that?
Well,
I think that'd be interesting, though.
John, just the instances of helmet head are giving.
I was
going to
say my hair would just be terrible every single day.
Yeah, then you're married to the helmet for the rest of the day. You're stuck with it.
That would be bad, wouldn't it?
Yes, we'd have to have top hats come back, and everyone would have to start wearing hats again to cover their hair from their helmet hair.
Yeah, you'd have a lot of people doing their hair at work. That's for sure.
Thanks a lot, John.
I feel like there's two stances today. I've now taken the libertarian view of just like let people, like whether it's the Bible at the beginning of like. Or not the Bible, but just books in general. Like, if you don't want your kid reading this book, that is your responsibility.
Don't let him read
the
book.
But don't overextend and say, no one can read this. No child can read this book. And the same thing here. It's like, there's no one stopping you from buying a car seat now. And as long as they have the information and they're aware of, listen, your kid, if there's turbulence, is never going to be as safe in your arms as they are in a car seat.
Right.
And that's in this Washington Post article. That's what they talk about. It's like, no matter how tightly, when you drop 4,000 feet instantly, which happens, there's no way that you can hold onto your kid tight enough because you're not even necessarily controlling your own body at that point.
Right.
And maybe that is a compromise, right? And so if they don't require it, it comes through when you are saying, I am traveling with a child, there becomes. And maybe they already have that, but maybe make it way more obvious instead of hidden in the terms of service that, listen, this is the risk that you are taking on by not buying an extra seat of like, this is what could happen. These are the advantages of actually buying the seat, but like still being very clear on it is safer for you to do this. But if you don't opt for that, this is the risk you are taking on.
844-967-2789. Should we ban lap babies on planes? Do we need to wear helmets in our cars? That's a whole other thing.
I feel like the term lap babies is kind of weird. It makes me think of like a sugar baby.
Different. Oh,
I know. That's what it's like lap babies. It's like a lap dance. Like, I feel like the words are like,
yeah, no.
But yeah, I feel like that is where I stand on this. As far as if there's any change, it would be to make it very apparent for parents when booking flights that are traveling with children under two of what the risk is.
Well, and there have to be some pretty specific guidelines about if you are holding your child in your lap and something happens, this is why we, the airline, are not liable for that.
Yeah, because I don't think they're liable for it now.
They couldn't possibly.
No.
Their lawyers would have freaked out about that a whole long time ago.
All right. Well, we will still be taking your calls after this if you want to weigh in on lap babies, which is not a dirty term. Otherwise, when we come back, we are giving away our last pair of tickets to go see Charlie Barron's in Madison on Monday. So whether you live in Madison, if you know someone who lives in Madison, maybe you have a student there right now who would like to go see this event, or you wanted to make the drive, 844-967-2789. We will take the third caller who would like to win those tickets. We'll ask you a couple questions, but you'll win no matter what. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Once again, that number is 844-967-2789. We'll be back in a minute.
About rainbows and what's on the other side. Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. That is Kermit the Frog.
Yes.
And we are giving away our last pair of free Charlie Barron's tickets to go see him live in Madison on Monday at Comedy on State while he does a live recording of his Cripescast podcast. And who do we have on the phone?
We have Steve from New Berlin. Thanks so much for calling, Steve.
Hello, ladies.
Congratulations, Steve. All right. Well, you win no matter what, and we will get your information after we let you go.
Yeah,
after this segment. Don't hang up on me. But while we have you, I guess, it's New Berlin. Are you going to travel to Madison, or you got someone in Madison that's going to use these?
As long as we don't get all this deep snow, I think I can make it out of New Berlin.
I forgot that the snow is coming tomorrow. What are you supposed to get, like 6 inches?
Four to six to eight. Yeah, it's going to be lots of fun.
All right.
By Monday, Steve, it should all be gone.
Yeah, it'll warm up. All right, so how confident are you about your Wisconsin State symbols?
50-50.
All right, so we already said that the Wisconsin bird is a robin.
Yep.
The Wisconsin tree is a sugar maple. The Wisconsin dance is the polka. Steve, what is the Wisconsin insect?
I'd call that the mosquito.
That's actually the Minnesota State bird.
Yes, yes, yes. It's that is unfortunately incorrect. It is the honeybee.
Oh.
Which I did not know until looking this up. So, yes, do we have an inordinate amount of honeybees here?
Well, they're critically important.
They are very important.
I am really proud of our state insect.
There you go.
That's a good one.
All right. Steve, number two, what is the Wisconsin state flower?
Ooh, Wisconsin flower. Let's go with the beautiful dandelion.
I'm going to go with the coneflower.
Both of you are wrong.
Oh.
Although Jane does love dandelions. It is the wood violet.
Oh. I don't know that I've ever
heard of it.
Okay.
Never heard of it.
We have to go to the woods.
The final one. These are harder, so good thing you won no matter what, Steve. But what is the Wisconsin State rock?
Rock.
It's a very sexy category, the state rock.
I'm going to go with a good rock, maybe a rock band of some sort. It's called the Steve Miller Band.
Actually, a texter texted it in at 844-967-2789. It is red granite.
Red granite, the not official, limestone.
Yeah, the official rock.
Not stalagmite.
Nope.
That is a city, right?
Red granite? Yes, it is.
Yeah, makes sense.
Although stalagmite's also not a rock. It's a formation, so... No one at me for that one. All right, Steve. Well
done, Steve.
You need to work on your Wisconsin trivia, but you still win. And so have so much fun at Charlie Baron's on Monday. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. And stay on the line. Jane will get your information after the show. And for us, it's been a good week.
It's been a great week. You know, yesterday was a great show. Today was a great show. If you missed David Mandel from yesterday.
Yes.
I would really encourage you to either go check it out as a podcast. It's also going to be part of our Best of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
That we're running. We come on after Charlie's show at 1 o'clock across the Civic Media Network. So David Mandel behind Veep, and he worked for Curb Your Enthusiasm and wrote for Saturday Night Live, and he's been a real slacker.
New show coming up that actually looks really good.
It does.
Which is White House Plumbers. Which is looking at, although he hates the word dramedy, we found out yesterday, but I think it is a drama with some comedic elements as far as the true believers during Watergate and the guys who
got hung up for it.
Yeah, the guys who, yeah. And
who
so
took the men who took the fall.
Yeah, and so that's coming up, as he said yesterday, in May. I think there was, at one point I read March, but he confirmed yesterday that it's going to be in May, which is good because there's a lot of competing primetime television or appointment setting. What is it? Appointment viewing television.
Yeah.
Yellow Jackets. I just read in one of our commercial breaks starts tonight, which I'm very excited about.
I've been catching up on Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso we caught up on as far as the two episodes for that. I'm really hoping that that this is actually not the last season, but.
I think it's going to be. I'm just glad that the second episode was not quite so dark. And I realized that.
Was the first episode that dark?
It just seemed to be missing some of the, I don't know, some of the sweetness and light. But this second episode I thought was just wonderful.
All right.
Lots of laughs.
Lots of laughs, yeah.
Lots of laughs.
But definitely go back and listen to that. If you have any ideas for guests, you can always email us at asgoeswisconsin@civicmedia.us. But stick around for Dueling Tangents or the Chad Holmes Show. He has he's talking about Wisconsin sports with Paul Mischlig, and then he is also talking to Newman Catholics All-State boys basketball player Mason Prey to talk about winning the state championship last weekend.
Oh, very cool!
That's a cool
life accomplishment.
Go ahead.
And just a reminder too, we do have snow coming in.
I know. I guess this is like the first like winter advisory that we haven't done a ton of talk about, but there is snow coming for Southeast Wisconsin.
Yeah, they're talking about it starting about 4 a.m. and going into tomorrow afternoon, anywhere from 3 to 6. They're still not quite sure how that's all going to shake out. So just be aware of that. If there's somewhere you're supposed to get early tomorrow morning, it may just be a little twitchy. So please be careful.
Yeah. And then if you missed your opportunity with us to win Charlie Baron's tickets, Luke is going to be giving more away on Dueling Tangents today. So you can have another chance to win, but you got to listen to Luke's show. I have no idea if he's also doing trivia or if he's doing trivia and you actually have to get it right in order to win.
He might do that.
We're a lot nicer. I also picked some pretty hard questions. So,
State rock.
All right. Well, we will be back on Monday. Thank you for listening. Thank you for texting. Thank you for being part of the show. As always, this has been As Goes Wisconsin. We'll see you next week.
Have you been half asleep? And have you heard voices? I've heard them calling my name. Is this the sweet sound that calls the young sailors? The voice might be one and the same. I've heard it too many times to ignore it. It's something that I'm supposed to be. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection. the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.